Lynn, welcome back. Good to have you once again.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So let's talk about, first of all, let's talk about the Spring Garden Fair, because that is coming up right on our heels here. It's coming up on Saturday and Sunday this weekend.
That's right. Yeah. So very excited. We're back out at the Expo for the first time since pre-COVID. So it's been, 5 years that we haven't been out there. 2019, what is it? 6 years. Anyway, it's been a long time. So now we're back out there. We're in a smaller venue because, during COVID, a lot of our vendors that we normally had when we would have it in the big arena have gone out of business or, had to pivot in their own businesses and are, doing other things now on that weekend. So we have the smaller arena. And we're going to be there. There's going to be a horse show at the expo and a dog show, and the Barnstormers and Master Gardeners are all going to be there that day.
Wow.
So it's a giant thing going on. But we've been growing summer vegetables for everybody to come and get for their gardens. And it's the perfect time to buy them is that first weekend in May. When we're sure that we're relatively sure that the frosts are not going to get them when they go out into the yards that people are growing. And then I've got just a native plant nursery chock full of plants that we're going to be hauling out there. So anyone who is interested in native plants for their yard, we're going to have hundreds of plants for sale. The nursery is really bursting at the seams, so Hopefully people will come and buy those.
You got it stuck well in my head from our previous conversation and several previous conversations about Mother's Day being the target for Rogue Valley planters in particular. So
yeah.
This is the perfect time to go get your stuff to go stick in the ground.
Right. Yeah, by then the soil really has warmed up, and those summer vegetables that like a warmer soil temperature can really just get in the ground and take right off rather than get in the ground and sit there because their feet are cold,
Right.
So, it's good timing, and we're really excited and really proud of our student volunteers that have been putting together all those.
So you mentioned, though, that you do have veggie starts as part of that collection?
Oh, no, absolutely. Mm-hmm. What our current student class of master gardeners, our students that started in January, have been growing herbs and vegetables and annual flowers for sale at Spring Garden Fair. That's what they do. And then the nursery that I run, the native plant nursery, is all other volunteers that I have come in and we work on growing the natives.
All right. So one thing that occurred to me as I was getting ready to talk to you is about the fact that if you're putting stuff into the ground that you're not starting from seeds yourself, you want to make sure you have a good organic garden. When you're buying plant starts from somebody else, veggie starts in particular, are they organic, or are they in some way touched by some kind of chemicals?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, I don't know if places like Bi-Mart or Home Depot or, even the Grange, I don't know if they're monitoring how their growers are growing their plants. I've never seen anything about, maybe at the Grange they have things that are labeled specifically organic, but I when I'm looking around at the start racks at local businesses, I'm not seeing any indication that those are grown organically. And so unless you know the source that they are buying from, there's really no way to track it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, unless they can tell you, we're only buying organic starts. But oftentimes they're not going to know.
Okay. All right. That's
an
important consideration. But if you've been doing starts yourself by like growing seeds indoors for a while, then you know from that. But a little late to start that process now, huh?
Yeah, it's late to start the summer vegetables now because, we're just a couple weeks out from having to plant them.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but growing from seed is great. I recommend that people grow their cucumbers and their squash, their summer squash, their winter squash, their pumpkins, all of those, and beans and corn can easily be grown from seed. And those can, you know, those can be direct seeded into the garden any time now, really. And so those are, I mean, it's just less expensive to buy a packet of seed than buy, you know, a six pack of beans or a little thing of squash, you know, two squash plants when you're supposed to plant six in a hill. it's much spendier to buy them pre-started. So the larger seeded things certainly can be started from seed, you know, probably any time now.
This is Garden for Life on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley with Lynn Kunstman, Master Gardener Extraordinaire from Jackson County Master Gardeners. Let's talk about putting stuff into the garden as you begin to do your planting, Mother's Day and beyond. Obviously, a little later for places like the Klamath Basin. But how important is it? I look at all the directions on seed packets, for example, you know, this many inches apart, this many inches deep, that sort of thing. I mean,
right. You
can't be too loosey-goosey about that kind of stuff, I would think.
Right, you really do. I mean, we can't stress enough how important it is to read the seed packet, because some things do need to be an inch down in the soil, you know, to get their proper start. Other things need to be on the surface of the soil. Like dill, you don't cover it with anything. It wants to germinate in the light. Mm. And so if you're not reading the seed packet and following those instructions, and if you're not thinning brutally, if you've sown something too thick, you know, because it tells you put them in an inch apart, but then thin to every 3 inches, if you don't do that, then you're setting up competition with those plants, and they can't thrive at their best level if you're not thinning those out the way you're supposed to. So it's real important to read those directions on the back of the seed packet and keep those in mind as you're weeding and then thinning and nurturing those plants along.
The thinning part, though, you have to be—you mentioned to be brutal about it. So just, you know, you're good, you're not so good, you're gone. I mean, you really have to like.
Right? Yeah. You know, you're okay. I've got to take one of the three of you here. You're the spindliest one. Sorry, you're the sacrificial guy. You know, that one's got to go. And so, I mean, some people they try lifting their seedlings and moving them around, but I think really, if it's something like carrots or radishes, you know, that a lot of seeds come in the packet, then it makes sense just to pull and chuck the spindly ones, you know, get rid of those.
Mm-hmm. Now, how about watering in? How important is that? Or is that just a different thing plant to plant about, you know, making sure you apply some water as you put stuff in the ground?
No, when you put a transplant in, so first of all, you're tipping it out of the pot. So you are disturbing its roots, and the roots are fragile. And then you're putting it into a new area. You don't want to put roots that want to be moist into a dry hole and then not water it in. You know, it's okay to put it into a hole that doesn't have any water in it yet, but as soon as you get that in and the soil snugged around it, you need to water it in to avoid shocking the plant. Real, real important that you water in any transplants, especially in these warmer months. You know, if it's the middle of winter and you're doing spring vegetables and the soil is real moist anyway, maybe not too serious an issue if you forget to get the hose out and water them in. But in May, you better have the hose on hand.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Getting plants ready for the ground, not shocking them too. We've talked in the past about making sure that if you've been growing things indoors, you kind of get them acclimated to the outdoors before you put them in the ground, don't you?
Sure, because it can happen either way with plants. You know, you can put them out and cold shock them if you try putting them out too early. But also, if, for instance, all of our plants have been grown in greenhouses, and so they're a little tender. And so we tell people, okay, when you take them home, put them out for 3 hours the first day in the sun, and then bring them undercover. And then, you know, like 4 or 5 hours the second day. Take them out each day and let them get used to being out in the full sunlight, the full UV light, before you go and plop them into the garden. And I've never had a situation where I had a plant really lose it under conditions where I planted it too early, but it's good to kind of get them used to being out there on the garden site and able to come out of the blazing afternoon sun for the first few days you have them, and then set them out there for the full, you know, 8-hour day, maybe the day before you plant them.
Okay. Lynn Kunstman's our guest once again on the Jefferson Exchange with this month's edition of Garden for Life. I'm Jeffrey Riley. You know, given how the weather's been less predictable in recent years, there is always a chance you can have some frost after you first put things in the ground. What kinds of frost protection should we consider if we got stuff out there and it looks like it might actually get a little chilly overnight?
Yeah, so I tell people to watch, you know, AccuWeather or one of those weather channels to kind of look ahead and see what's going to happen. But I often will just put large flower pots out by my tomatoes and peppers and eggplants. Those are the ones that are generally the most tender to, you know, even a small frost. And I just have them upside down next to the plant in the garden. And then if I realize if there's a frost warning, I just run out at 5 p.m. and pop the pot over the plant. And then I can lift that the next morning and there's no problem at all.
Super simple.
Yeah. So that's really the simplest way. Some people like to put up row covers, which are those, you know, you put pipes or they can actually just drape that white Rimae material that the light can get through over their plants at night. And that way, but the problem is, you know, you've got to pin it down somehow because wind can blow it off.
Right.
And but that's also a good frost protection if you don't want to do or you don't have a lot of big garden pots, you know, yeah. Gallon size or bigger containers to put over your little babies. So Rimae cloth works really well.
Mm-hmm.
And in the fall, on the other end of the thing, when we start getting frost in the fall and I still want to have tomatoes, I'll put sheets over my big tomato vines mm-hmm. to just keep them from being, you know, nipped by the frost. And then that can extend harvest. You take it off in the morning and put it on at night and you've got another week or two of harvest. So. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's spend the last couple minutes talking about Native Spring Garden Fair once again. So Saturday and Sunday, May 3rd and 4th, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Jackson County Expo. You mentioned chock full of native plants. What's the popular one? What's the one you have the most of? Or is that the same thing?
Well, oh, my gosh. I've got Western columbine, which are beautiful hummingbird attracting plants. I've got native bunch grasses, which are skipper butterflies need for overwintering and reproduction. I've got blue flax, and I've got serviceberry. Serviceberry is a big popular one now because Robin Wall Kimmerer just wrote a new book. The woman who wrote Braiding Sweetgrass mm-hmm. has written a new book called The Serviceberry, and it's about that berry. So I've got a lot of those, and other shrubs. I've got snowberry and ninebark and, Oregon grape, lots of stuff. So good things to put in your yard to bring, butterflies and birds to your yard.
I do remember I wrote it down from last time we talked about the fact that, you know, don't put out a bird feeder, put out, you know, plants that will attract the birds and feed them.
Yeah, I tell people don't buy a bird feeder, plant a bird feeder, right? The, the seed feeders have limited value. There are only a couple species of birds that can feed their young seeds in the nest. And they need to feed most 95% of our songbirds have to feed caterpillars. And the way you get caterpillars is to plant native plants because our native moths and butterflies have to lay their eggs in native plants, in native vegetation. So really, really important.
All right. We'll talk about insects a little more in depth next time, I guess, because we're out of time for this one. But boy, it's exciting. Here we are at planting time. 2025 Spring Garden Fair, Saturday the 3rd, Sunday the 4th. 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturday, Sunday 10 to 2 p.m. Lynn Kunstman is with Jackson County Master Gardeners and our guide once again on Garden for Life. Lynn, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks for listening. I'm Jeffrey Riley.